The story in the gospel today is basically that there's this place in the north of Israel, the land of Zebulun and Naphtali, and it's sort of like known as the dark place because when the Assyrians came and invaded the northern part of Israel, they just blew the place apart, they burned it down, they exiled all the people, and it never really recovered. So this is what we heard in Isaiah and in the gospel today. There's this dark place to the north. Jesus goes to that place, to the land of Zebulun and Naphtali, right into the heart of darkness, and there begins to reveal himself as light in the darkness. He immediately calls Simon and Andrew, James and John. He creates this new community that's unlike anything else in the world. He creates a community that is united just by one thing, and that is by love of him. The disciples, as they respond to this call, they leave behind their lives, they leave behind their individual fights against the darkness, and they join Jesus in his work. So Simon and Andrew, James and John, when I say they leave behind their fights against the darkness, I just mean they leave behind their livelihood. They leave behind, you know, human life. It's like a struggle against futility. It's like sometimes a fight for survival, but it's to make our place in the world, to seek a life of joy and happiness. And then what comes from this, after Jesus creates this new community and he calls the disciples and they respond, is that he goes around preaching and healing. So the story about the story of the gospel that we heard today is our story also. We, each of us individually and as a whole community, we're in a battle against darkness. Each of us fights every day. This is why it's sometimes hard to get up in the morning. Every one of us fights for love, sometimes for survival, for a life of joy and meaning. We fight for our families. And we're up against a lot of difficulties. We've got children who are baptized who leave the church. Many children leaving the church. We've got isolation and a lack of connection and support for families and married couples and individuals. We're dealing with a real epidemic of pornography and then alcohol and abuse also. There's scandal and disappointment with the church, and there's even division in our own families. So each of us, when we get up in the morning, we know that oftentimes it's a fight against the darkness. And Jesus comes as light in the darkness, and he comes to us today in this gospel. And when he shows up, he calls his disciples to follow him. He creates a new community that is united by one thing, and that is love of him. He calls each of us today to this new community that is united by one thing, that is love of Jesus. This is a different kind of union. The church, the union of the church, is not like the union of a social club where we go and we spend time with people that we like or people who think like us or people who share our politics. It is not like the union of the cars in the McDonald's drive-thru. That's a consumeristic union. We're all there for the same thing, and there is some sort of union, you know, like we're all there for a Big Mac and fries and that special Coke that you can only get at McDonald's. It's not like a union either of a gym or a yoga membership or something, because there we go, and yeah, we're doing something together, and maybe we get to know people, but ultimately, we're there so that our own personal lives can be enriched. It's not like that. The church is a union of those who are called by Jesus to follow him, who love Jesus more than their own lives, and who will do anything that he tells us. So we're the disciples, and we're called to forsake our individual fights against the darkness and to join Jesus, just like Simon and Andrew, just like James and John. And he calls us today. You might just take stock. The disciples had to leave behind their boats, their livelihood, their father, and their nets. If you take up the call of Jesus today, what is it? What's your boat that you're leaving behind? What do you have to give up to follow him more closely? St. Paul, in the second reading, he talked about these different factions that are competing and jealous of each other. And I want to name for you the groups that I see here at St. Luke. Now, thankfully, like, I don't see a lot of competition. I don't see a lot of rivalry and jealousy among the groups here. But I do see separate groups that Jesus is calling to be more united than they have been before. So the first one is the longtime parishioners. These are people who they understand themselves as insiders because they've been here since the beginning. You know, these are people who have been here 10 or 15 years who remember being at the Christian school in the gym or who remember being at the dollar store before coming here. Oftentimes, these are the families that are very involved, and often as a whole family. You know, somebody's an usher, somebody else is an altar server, somebody else is in the choir. They're well connected to each other. They know each other. They like spending time with each other because they worked shoulder to shoulder in the ways that we newcomers can only imagine. You know, like what would it be like if you and 100 other people here were hanging drywall here in St. Luke? You'd get to know each other in a different sort of way. So that's what these longtime parishioners have. They jump at fellowship opportunities because they know each other and love each other and like spending time together. And one thing I notice is that they have been serving in whatever capacity for a long time, sometimes since the beginning. And some of them feel a little bit tired or discouraged because, though they're happy to keep serving, they haven't seen the new generation step up and join them in it. So that's the first group, the longtime parishioners. The second group is the newer parishioners. These are usually people who have registered and joined the parish like in the last 5 years or so. These are the people that only know this building as St. Luke. They don't remember the dollar store or the Christian school. Oftentimes this group, they're happy to be here. They've got a commitment to the parish, but they don't feel like insiders yet. They're not yet as involved maybe as they want to be. And sometimes they can feel like, I see that inside group and maybe I'd like to be in there, but I don't know how to get in. Okay, that's number two. Number three is the student parishioners that we have. And I want to ask a favor of you. Okay, I want to change our terminology. If you've ever heard of the CFRs, okay, they're these Franciscan brothers who live in like all the dangerous places of New York City, the CFRs. And they serve the poor and they reach out to neighborhood kids and they do just like wonderful work. But they're very careful about the way they talk. Okay, when somebody comes to the door, whether they're homeless or just in need or maybe they're all drugged up, I don't know what. When somebody comes to the door and asks for help, they say, one of our neighbors came and asked for food. Okay, they call them our neighbors. They don't say somebody who is poor or they don't say some homeless person, but they say our neighbor, Jim, or our neighbor, Denise. So the terminology matters. Usually we call the students kind of as a big group, just the students. And I don't think it's helpful when it comes to unity because it's sort of like there's the parish and then there's those students that kind of hang around here. We don't want that. We want greater union than that. So what I want you to do with me is to change our terminology to call them student parishioners. Okay. Yeah. They'll maybe only be here for as long as they're at Grand Valley. But these are the students that have a commitment to this place and know this place not just as the place to go to Mass, but as their home. These are the ones that hang around, who are involved, who get to know your names. I want to call them student parishioners because they know this place as their home and as their family. The last group, number four, are those people who go to Mass here maybe very regularly, haven't registered, don't really know anybody. Their commitment is sort of low, even if it's very regular. And this includes older people, younger people, families, students, whatever. These are the people that just come here for Mass and don't yet see St. Luke's as a home or a family for them. So whatever group you put yourself in, I know that the descriptions that I've given, they're not perfectly accurate. They're not going to apply to everybody. Maybe you feel like I've totally missed who you are and how you fit in there. But these are just broad strokes to name those groups. And all these groups have strengths and weaknesses. And very importantly, all of these groups, every member of these groups, are appreciated gifts to this parish. All of these groups and all the individuals in them, the Lord calls us to be united in a greater union than we have had before, to not base our union on things that we have in common or who we like or who we don't, but on one thing, and that is love of Jesus. That's the only thing. And this is what the Lord is trying to create in His church. So what I want to do before we end this is to try to articulate the culture of St. Luke, the thing that we can all join together and get behind. And this is kind of it's kind of a dangerous thing, but I'm going to give it my best crack. Now, importantly, I don't want extra long homilies to become part of the culture of St. Luke. Okay, I feel for especially people with young children and everything. And the last few weeks have been extra long, so it's not going to stay this way. Okay, we're going to go back to normal, but we're trying to get some momentum going. I have a lot to tell you. When I talk about an articulation of culture, what I'm trying to say is what is expected by everybody, what is considered normal, what is celebrated when it's seen, okay? And the reason why we want to start with culture, because we'll have strategies, we'll have programs and all that stuff. We'll do all that. But somebody once famously said, culture eats strategy for breakfast. Okay, you can have the best laid plans, But if the culture that exists, if the attitudes and assumptions that are just floating around in the air, if they're in competition with that, it's all going to just crash and burn. Okay, so that's why we're talking about culture today. Before I say this, keep in mind the stuff that we've talked about in the last couple weeks. We talked about the ship with its three goals: to reach its destination, to take care of those on board, and to pull people out of the water along the way. We talked about the phases of reaching where we want to go as a parish. Number one, getting our act together. Number two, preparing to receive people, you know, being ready for guests and visitors. And then number three, going out and bringing people in and inviting them. I also want to share with you some very encouraging experiences just from the last week. We had family faith formation this week on Wednesday. So a bunch of parents and a bunch of kids were here, divided in their different grade groups. And it was focused on the Eucharist and on Mass and the liturgy. So we had like a walkthrough Mass where we explained a bunch of stuff, and hopefully they learned a few things. We had a tour of the sacristy. We had time in adoration all together. And one of the parents, to my great joy, as they were leaving the sacristy, they said, "Father Rob, is this part of the training to be a sailor?" And I said, "Yes, you were listening. I can't believe it. That's exactly what this is. This is goal number two. This is taking care of and training up those who are already on board the ship." Another thing that has been encouraging this week is I've gotten a few emails from people who have said, "Father Rob, I see the need, and I'm done waiting around. I'm done waiting for somebody else to step up. I will do it." And so they volunteer maybe to be an usher or something else. That has been wonderful too. Last Sunday after 10:30 Mass, you know, we have donuts and coffee and things, and something happened with the schedule. There was nobody there for 10:30. And I didn't know this, so I went into the kitchen afterward, and there were two of our student parishioners back there washing the dishes. And I said, "Wow, I didn't know you guys were on this list. It's really good that you're here." And they said, "We actually weren't scheduled. There was just nobody to do it. We were listening to your homily, so here we are washing the dishes." And I just, like, you know, that makes my heart sing. That's all we're looking for. So those are just some of the encouraging things that have happened. Now, I want to articulate our culture in 3 points. And the thing that I have in mind is actually this. I have this priest friend in Minnesota. His name is Father Louis, and he is the third or fourth of 12 children. And one time when we were in seminary, he invited us all over to his parents' house, and we had dinner there. They have this huge round table with this huge Lazy Susan on it so everybody can sit together. And over the dining room, there's this sign with these 3 points, and it says, "The Rules of the Dojo." Okay, that's how they call their house, the dojo. And they were this: number one, no man is an island. Number two, brick by brick. Number three, happy warriors. Okay, so that was like what they all held in common, what they all knew by heart, the way that they all tried to live together. That was like their articulated family culture that mattered to them, what they celebrated, what was normal, what was all held in common. So that's what I want to do today. So this is my attempt. And I want your feedback on this, because probably we can find better phrasing for it. I want to hear from you, maybe what I'm missing. But here's the articulation, hopefully, of St. Luke's culture. Number one, God first. Number two, everybody works. Number three, invitation. Okay, here's what I mean. I'm going to explain all these. Number one, God first. That means that prayer and Mass, adoration, scripture, conversion, formation, holiness, this is the most important thing we do. Everything takes a back seat to these things. God first. This means that this is where we're going to first put our time and our energy and even our money, because without this, we are nothing and we have nothing. Okay, this is why when I got here, there were needs that I saw, there were things that we could work on, but I wanted to focus on the altar servers first. And because, you know, when there are too few servers, or when servers are poorly trained, you watch one of them picking their nose during Mass or something like that. Not these guys, okay? These guys are great. But it messes up Mass. And this is the heart of everything. This is our most important time with the Lord. So I wanted to work on the altar servers first. This is also why I asked the ushers at the beginning and end of Mass to leave the doors closed. Okay, they were always left open. And I think the intention was to be welcoming, good thing, and so that, you know, we felt like we're together, we can talk, we want to build community in that way. Those are good things. But I asked them to close it to protect the quiet prayer in church before and after Mass. Because this is something that is precious, but easily broken, you know? So that's why I asked him to close the doors. Because God has to come first. Being welcoming, having this strong community, having time to socialize, very important, matters a lot to us. But it always has to come second to our time with the Lord. This is why what I hope for, what I want, is that every person, and especially those who are in charge or lead any kind of ministry, have a commitment to a life of prayer and continued study and formation. Nobody's done. Okay, nobody can say, I've converted enough. Or nobody can say, I know the Lord enough. Or I've studied the teachings of the church enough. Nobody can say that. Okay, everybody, maybe you can say, nobody's a done muffin. You ever hear that before? Everybody needs this. This is why every 2 weeks I meet with a group of four other priests and we study and pray and share, because everybody needs this. Nobody's accepted. This is also why our faith formation has a great emphasis on the parents, because the kids are not the only ones who have to learn. The parents need formation also, and we want to provide it. This is why my hope for men's and women's ministry is that this will be the place, the main place, where everybody has this group where they can study and grow and be challenged and pray, where we're all kept on track together. God first is the number one thing, because this is the source of everything else that we want as a parish. We want a strong community, but community is a fruit of discipleship. Okay, we want service to the poor, but service to the poor is a fruit of discipleship. And if there isn't discipleship, if God isn't put first, then we're just spinning our wheels and not going to get anywhere with anything else. We want generous stewards of time and talent and treasure, but this kind of generosity is a fruit of discipleship, of knowing the Lord. We want growth in numbers. We want evangelization. We want vocations. All of these things are a fruit of discipleship, of knowing, loving, and serving the Lord with all of our lives. So that's why, number one, God first. Okay, number two is everybody works. And this is something that that I have already seen here. Something that is beautiful already in like the atmosphere of St. Luke that I don't want to get lost, but I want to hold on to and foster and grow. The people who have been here for a long time, they know this, because when they were at the Christian school, it was an empty gym and they had to set up for Mass. So you knew if you went to St. Luke, I got to get there before Mass time because I got to set up my own chair and I got to set up everybody else's chairs. It's just part of the deal. People know this because at the dollar store, they had to build this place. And so they showed up and sweated and worked and hung drywall and put in lights and all that stuff. They did this all together. We had a little experience of this here at St. Luke at the new building the canopy, where people said, I will do it. I will work. I will do this for my parish. And good things came of it, certainly. So when I say everyone works, number two, that's like, it's something that is here, but we don't want it to slip. We want it to grow. Importantly, I do not mean everybody is involved. Like when you hear everybody works, it doesn't mean that we need like 100 ushers. Okay, we probably need like 60 ushers, to be honest. Doing some calculations on that. To be comfortable, we probably want like 60 ushers. But involvement comes from somewhere else. Okay, involvement is not where we're formed. Involvement in ministries is not supposed to be our main connection with the parish. First of all, everybody works means that we take responsibility for our own life of discipleship. It means, basically it boils down to four things when we say everybody works. It means the expectation is daily prayer, weekly Mass at least, and hopefully more, monthly confession, and then a real permanent commitment to a life of formation and study and growth. That's the first thing. From that, then we get like the fruits of that, which is involvement in different things and serving in different capacities. Okay, but the first thing is that we work at our own life of discipleship and providing that for others. From our life of discipleship, from working on that, comes our responsibility for the parish. Okay, so sometimes that means setting up chairs, yeah. Or grabbing a shovel and clearing the sidewalks, because rather than waiting for somebody else to do that. Sometimes it means responding to the needs as they come up. Other times it just means picking up that piece of trash in the vestibule. Don't wait for somebody else to do it. This is your parish. Other times it means bringing concerns to me, finding solutions, working together on that. Okay, everybody works. This also certainly has to do with giving. Giving is very important. Without money, we can't have lights in here, you know, things like that. Without that, we'll forfeit the building. giving, what I want to say about it is that we give as we can, and the amount matters less than the commitment and the regularity. If you can just give $10 a week, then give $10 a week. And don't be ashamed of it. But the commitment and regularity, this is very important. One good thing that comes from this is that when we give regularly, we have some skin in the game. Okay, we can no longer be indifferent to how this place goes. When you come here and the heat is on and the lights are on and there's bread and wine back there for Mass and the candles are here and lit, you can say, I helped provide this. I contributed to this. My skin is in this game. I'm one of the insiders here. I'm not just a visitor who is depending on the generosity of others. I'm a contributor. And this is really what I want to come from, number two, everybody works. What I want is that all of you become insiders. We want everyone on the inside. Okay, we don't want like a small group that knows everything and runs everything. We want everybody to become insiders. That means to know your way around this place enough that you can guide somebody else. So when somebody says, where's the bathroom? You can show them. It means when there's a spill, you know where the vacuum is to get it cleaned up. When somebody asks, how do I get started for a baptism? You can guide them and point them in the right direction. Or when they say, when's adoration or confession? You know, because this is your parish, you know, because you're an insider here. Number three is invitation. And it's important, I use the word invitation rather than welcome, because welcome, it can be kind of a stagnant thing. You know what? You ever have a garage sale where, you know, you say, you know, people are welcome and nobody shows up? This is not the kind of thing we want. We don't just want to be like, hey, you can stop by if you want to, and we're really nice here. No, we want invitation. We want to go call people in. This is another thing, just like everybody works, that is already present, that I saw here and experienced here when I got here. Invitation, it means community, certainly, and it refers to evangelization. But I have talked to people who came here initially and who stayed here and have been here for many years because of one thing, and that was because of the welcome and warmth that they felt when they came in. Okay, when they came in, I don't know what conceptions they had as the people at St. Luke, but they were scared that they weren't going to fit in, and they didn't have high hopes. But because the welcome and invitation was so warm, they felt like they were brought in to belong. Now, we want a strong community, but very often strong communities can become closed or intimidating or hard to get into and kind of elitist. I've experienced this. You see some parishes that have a lot of good stuff going on, and you show up there, and everybody knows everybody, but then it's like a wall. Like, I would like to participate in this, but you guys are busy with your own thing, and I can't figure out how to get in. This is why invitation is so important, because we have to always be calling people to the inside with us. One place that I have seen this done extremely well is in religious communities. I remember the Little Sisters of the Lamb in Kansas City one time. And these are like 10 religious women. They live and eat together. They do everything together. They know each other. They have a strong community. But when you show up there, you are made to belong. You're not just like a guest that's well taken care of, but you're brought in immediately. And maybe they have work to do that day and you're invited into it immediately. One thing that's really important about this, I think, is the way that we talk. Because I've been part of strong communities before that were kind of exclusive. Unintentionally, I've learned this too late, and I realized one of the issues was that somebody came in and we gave them a warm welcome, but then we turned to each other who already knew each other, and we talked about things that we shared, memories that we have from long ago, things that we hold in common that these people have no idea about and have no access to. What I found in the Little Sisters of the Lamb when I visited them was that their conversation changed immediately, and it was all things that I could participate in, that I could be a part of. They were willing to like put their own deep relationships a little to the back to draw me in as far as possible. So it matters the way that we talk to each other after we invite somebody in. We have to become insiders to invite people to the inside. When you're here for Mass or for any other thing, I want you to put yourself second. I want you to allow yourself to be troubled by the newcomer. I want you to pay attention to somebody else's need. To raise your eyes and look around for somebody who's lost. One place I see this actually, and you know, I mean, sometimes I don't know how you feel about it. Maybe you get annoyed. I really don't get annoyed by it, but I love hearing little kids in church. And sometimes they go totally berserk. And that's okay. Sometimes you can just watch these parents like slowly be overrun by their children, and they can't quite keep up. And you don't want to embarrass them, but invitation has to do with reaching out to them or giving them an encouraging word, or sometimes just saying, like, do you know other families here? Because I do, and I can introduce you. Like being a host in that way and connecting them to bigger groups. We got a lot of great families, and I think they're kind of disjointed right now. They don't all know each other. I found that at family formation. All the parents were kind of looking around like, who are these people? And hopefully, you know, meeting every month like this is helping them to get to know the people around them. God first, everybody works, and invitation. This is my best attempt right now to articulate the culture of St. Luke's, what is distinct and good, what we celebrate and rejoice in, what's expected and normal around here. Jesus calls us today to follow him as his disciples, to leave behind what was before and to be united in this new community that he's creating, the church. And I think what it looks like here is those three things: God first, everybody works, and invitation.